I'm Elizabeth Ames, and this is the Women in Product podcast, where we share the stories of women product leaders, the careers they've built, the challenges they've overcome, and why they love building tech products. Today, we're wrapping up our 8th annual Women in Product conference. Over the course of the past 2 days, thousands of brilliant and determined product managers have joined together to build what's next. Whether that's the next product, the next role, the next level, or the next challenge, there are infinite possibilities and paths. On today's episode, you'll hear some of our favorite clips from this year's keynote speakers. The conference kicked off with an opening keynote from Ami Vora, Chief Product Officer at FAIR. Ami is a longtime leader in the product community with over 15 years of experience leading products for WhatsApp, Meta, and Microsoft. She reflected on those 15 years and shared the lessons she's learned to reach Chief Product Officer.
You know, early on in my career, there was kind of a clear path for what career growth looked like. For example, as a PM, first I was responsible for a feature and then a product area and then a bigger domain and then an entire product line. And it wasn't easy to actually do those things, but I could look at my career ladder, I could look at some colleagues who were a little ahead of me, and I could get an idea of what the next level looked like. But after I got to director, I couldn't really see a clear path to follow anymore. I didn't know a lot of people at more senior levels, and I really didn't know a lot of people who reminded me of me. I mean, I'll tell you, especially all the really senior women I met seemed like superwomen. You know, they were awake all the time. They were always well-dressed. They'd already done their workout by 4 a.m. every day. And I was like, I sleep a lot, and I don't really have a plan, and I haven't worn heels since the year 2009. So I just kind of assumed that I'd never be successful. And I had to wonder, what does my growth even look like? And how do I get there? I had to learn that after a certain level of seniority, A, there is no mold for what will get my career to the next level. Our industry changes every day. Our customers change every day. So I'm going to have to constantly reassess what's most needed now. And B, there's no mold for how I should operate as a leader. There is not yet a cookie-cutter career ladder for a senior technical woman who has 3 kids and likes puns and can eat cereal 3 meals a day. I mean, if you know of one, sign me up. But until then, I've got to figure out what feels authentic to me. And so I've seen the most growth when I've said, you know, no one's asking me to do this, but I'm going to do it because I think it's important. Whether that's making a tough change to a product direction or just telling a joke to kick off a weekly meeting. Now, this can be terrifying. It requires me to think about my understanding of the customer, what I think is important for the company, and how I choose to express myself. And then I actually have to put myself and my opinions out there, which can be even scarier. But I also try to see the freedom and empowerment in it. Since there aren't clear expectations I need to fit into, I have a chance to try on both what's important to the company and authentic to me. So I have control over how I show up as a leader.
Ami's opening talk was followed by a panel conversation expanding on our podcast series, The Path to CPO. Rashmi Ramesh, co-creator of the podcast series and product leader, talked with Kataki Rao, Chief Product Officer of Data AI, and Malaika Pekiau, Chief Product Officer of Avalanche Insights.
Malaika, in this whole process, what has been the hardest to break into being a Chief Product Officer, and why was it hard? Are there any specific challenges as a woman that you faced during this process of getting to being a Chief Product Officer?
Anytime people in a place of power or influence don't really see you as the prototype or the archetype of whatever it is, whether it's CPO or CTO or CEO, or then it can be a challenge. And I think of my experience too, not only as a woman, right? I think all of us can recognize that we are intersections of being women and women of color. So there's that. Sometimes you don't know where the challenge is coming from. Is it because I'm a woman? Is it because I'm a person of color? So that has definitely been a challenge. I would say people not seeing you as that archetype. The other challenge has been the sort of typical challenges of people not necessarily listening and you having to sort of repeat yourself or spend time getting other people to say what it is that you're saying so that people will start to listen. All of that extra labor that goes into getting people to listen to you, you know, can be challenging. That said, you know, life is challenging for a lot of people and we all push through, and it's why communities like this are so important. Yes, it's good to have mentors and it's good to have advocates, but it's also good to have cheerleaders. Just your, you know, they may or may not be in product. Just your people who make you feel good when you're going through these challenges.
That's very well said, I think, especially the power of community to really get you there, right? So yeah, absolutely loved it. Kitaki, you want to add something there?
Yeah, you know, I agree again with what Malaika mentioned here. I want to go a little bit deeper with this concept of unconscious bias. I don't think people are evil. They're not like, I'm going to block all women or women of color, right? It's just they are doing subconsciously doing pattern matching. Like, I've seen these CPOs, they look like this, they talk like this, and you don't look like that and you don't talk like it, so I don't think you can be a CPO. I've got similar feedback to Malaika. I was told, you know, no executive presence. And what does that really mean? Like, you know, I didn't take it personally. I just said, what does that mean? What do you want me to do that'll change the equation? And really the important thing was finding someone who could tell you what that was. What does it mean? So I'll give you one example. My current CEO, Ted Kranz, has been an amazing mentor. He taught me the power of pausing and leaving the silence. So see, right now, I've said something, and then I just leave a moment of silence. People have the space to absorb it, and your impact is felt. That just changes you from saying something that you're expressing to becoming an executive presence, someone who people are listening to, just being quiet for a couple of seconds. It's very hard to do if you think about it. It's really hard to have silence. It can be awkward, especially with the board. To your point, Malaika, part of the role is speaking to the board, and you have to be comfortable with these silences. So finding someone who can take it from this, you know, subjective executive presence, you won't be a CPO, to specific behaviors is critical. So I found it really hard to break into the CPO role because I'm a first-time CPO. So another challenge is everyone who's looking for a CPO wants someone who's done it before. It has to be a first time. Someone who's willing to take a chance with you is very important. To me, what was key was once I had decided I wanted to be a CPO, and that was at Salesforce, I just didn't look at opportunities that were not a CPO opportunity. I was just very clear with any recruiter, not interested, very happy at Salesforce. If you have a CPO role, I'm willing to change my mind. So that meant, you know, like saying no to the fangs, saying no to some big money sometimes, but it was high enough on my priority to say, this is it, this is what I want next. And I won't accept anything else. That was key to break into the CPO role for me. It was hard. It was tough, team.
Day two opened with a keynote from Natalia Castileo, Group Product Manager at Duolingo. Natalia oversees the development of Duolingo's language learning features. She shared the challenges and the opportunities they discovered as they incorporated generative AI into their products.
For those of you who may not be familiar with Duolingo, we are the world's most popular language learning platform and the most downloaded education app in the world. Our mission is to develop the best education in the world and make it universally available. Our app offers free bite-sized lessons that help you learn, but feel like a game. Duolingo has been focused on integrating generative AI into our product development process. One of the first things that we learned when integrating generative AI into our product is that it can be very easy to get so wrapped up into the tool's capabilities that you lose track of the problem that you're trying to solve. But we have found that taking a step back and thinking about the specific user problems that we're trying to solve helped us create a more focused, valuable experience for our learners. Last year, Duolingo got early access to GPT-4, a language model that enables anyone to have a realistic conversation in almost any language with a very knowledgeable chatbot. We could ask it to explain a grammar concept or ask it to translate a sentence to a different language, and it would do a pretty good job at it. Naturally, one idea that we discussed was integrating this language model into the app in the form of a language tutor. Learners would be able to ask it any language question that they wanted or ask how to say a particular expression in a different language. But we soon realized that we had fallen into the trap of focusing too much on the technology and what it could do instead of the problem that we're trying to solve. There were a few issues with the idea of an AI tutor. First, anyone could build a simple tutor chatbot with ChatGPT, so our product wouldn't be very differentiated. In fact, you can go to ChatGPT right now and ask questions like, how do you say this in Spanish? Or explain this grammar concept to me. Second, we had learned from previous experiments that giving users too much choice, such as in the form of a freeform tutoring experience, often resulted in them feeling overwhelmed with options and not knowing where to start. In fact, learning research shows that people who learn a language are usually not so great at knowing what the most optimal thing to learn next is. Indeed, most of our learners are used to coming to Duolingo to tell them what they should focus on next, not the other way around. That's how we realized that an open-ended AI tutor would not be the way to go, even if GPT-4 allowed us to make that happen. So we went back to the drawing board and we asked ourselves, what user problems had we always wanted to solve but had never attempted because of scalability concerns? This way of framing the problem drove the focus away from what generative AI could do and refocused it on the user problem to be solved. It helped us to think of generative AI as a means to an end and not as the end in itself. While we didn't think that an open-ended AI tutor would work, we did know that learners craved explicit and personalized explanations on the mistakes that they would make on Duolingo lessons. That's why one of our teams started to develop our Explain My Answer feature, which analyzes the mistakes that you make on Duolingo lessons and then gives you a report on what you got wrong. If you translated a sentence incorrectly, you would get the option to see a detailed explanation of your mistake. Your AI tutor would tell you that in French, adjectives like dernier come before the noun and not after it. We tried this feature and rolled it out to real learners, and people loved it. By providing personalized feedback within our regular Duolingo lessons at the exact moment that a question about language learning came up, we both ended up solving a real user need and maximized learning value.
And to close out day two keynotes, Phil Terry, author of Never Search Alone and founder and CEO of Collaborative Gain, joined Allison Mnookin, senior lecturer of business administration at the Harvard Business School.
Everyone who's read the book and has done the Job Search Council and the methodology, they're so excited to meet you. You're the Allison Mnookin of the Mnookin two-pager. And you went on a listening tour to figure out your candidate market fit. But, you know, initially, you were kind of passive. Can you take us back to that important moment 13 years ago? What was going on?
Sure, yeah. So I'd been at Intuit a long time and had a couple different roles. I'd been a general manager of the QuickBooks business. I wanted to do something more entrepreneurial. So I joined an internal startup, essentially, and was this more or less the COO of that division. But we just were in the process of closing on an acquisition where we were buying a new company. The two teams were going to be merged. The new CEO that we'd hired was going to become the new leader of the division. And it was one of those moments where it was really clear at a minimum my job would change, whether it would be there, go away. You know, it was sort of all fuzzy. And honestly, I wasn't super focused yet on me or doing anything about it. I was kind of focused on the business. So that was the quick context of the moment.
Yeah. Can I add something? Really important to add, and I want, so many of you watching this are in a job, right? And so this methodology is not just for those of you out of work and looking, but it's also for those of you who are in a job and thinking about your next steps in your current company. In fact, you know, one of the key developers of this methodology, that's what she was doing. So say more, Allison. Okay.
Yeah. So at that point, my job was still there, but a little unclear what the future was going to look like. And I loved Intuit. I loved the company. I wasn't really looking to leave necessarily. But anyway, I happened to have had, I don't remember, a coffee, a lunch, something with a woman I'd worked for many years earlier and was still a friend. I never had the like capital M mentor, but if there ever was one, she would probably have been it. And I was telling her a little bit about what was going on, and she more or less was like, get off your tush. You know, like she's like, what are you waiting for? Go start figuring out what you want to do next. And that was kind of the shove I needed a bit to say, oh yeah, good point. It probably is going to change. And whether there's something there or not, I might as well explore what would be a good next. So that was sort of the triggering moment.
Now you did something phenomenal. You're going to hate me using this word phenomenal because you don't feel like that's, you know, but it really is because many people find it really hard to do what you did next, which was sit down and why don't you say what you started to think about?
Yeah. So I started to draft a document and really sort of put myself in reflection mode, which is if I was going to think about what's next, tried to think about, well, what did I love? And when I got up in mornings and I loved my job that day, what was that about? And if there were days I hated, what was that about? And could I articulate for myself, you know, sort of that description of me, more or less? Because then if I was going to go, you know, be looking for something, I might as well. I mean, I think you've now coined it in a far better way than I ever did, but in this candidate market fit. But I think that instinct of it's only a win if it's a win-win. So I might as well start figuring out what I want and value, not just what's out there. So that was sort of the beginning.
And so, I mean, this is so exciting. I love this because this is the beginning of the Mnookin two-pager. This was the first, this is the document we talk about in the book. And it's so fun because I get to tell you, I was like, thousands of people are creating Mnookin two-pagers. And we have Slack channels where they're sharing their Mnookin two-pagers with each other and getting feedback, you know, before.
Well, you give me too much credit, but I hope it's helpful because it was really helpful for me, this the exercise I went along.
Thank you for joining us. If you're listening to these clips from our 2023 keynote speakers after attending the conference, I hope you're inspired by them once again. If you're hearing them for the first time, I hope you too feel inspired and consider joining us at other Women in Product events or the conference next year. I'm grateful to all of our speakers for sharing their wisdom, and I'm grateful to our community and sponsors for making this conference possible. Thank you for listening, and thanks also to our partners, Discover, Google, Meta, and Upwork, who provide annual support for the work of Women in Product and our community. This podcast is an original production of Women in Product. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave us a review so that others can discover us, or share this episode with people you know. If you have any questions or suggestions for future guests or topics, you can reach us at podcast@womenpm.org.